Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, chickpeas, Ace Man here. Well, let me tell you what's coming up. Seth Green is coming in to talk about all things, including a throwback commercial, which is insane. I take a deep dive into the Partridge Family. We have a caller who got caught peeing in the sink. So lots of ground to cover in today's first half of the show. First, Dollar Shave Club. You know that autopilot feeling just cruising along? Dollar Shave Club can take care of you when that happens. They have quality products that help me and you look and smell our best. You get everything we need from Dollar Shave Club without going to the store. It's so nice because your time is worth something, people. I've been a member for years. I love the shave butter. I love the razors. I love the cartridges. I love all their products. It's all, even their toothpaste is great. Body wash, shampoo, again, the toothpaste, just mint, just great, just basic, just perfect. Dollar Shave Club spent years developing and refining their products. So much better than the stuff you get at the store and so much easier as well. It's Dollar Shave Club, right, Dawson?
Right now, you can get a Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5. It comes with everything you need for a great shave. The executive razor, shave butter, and face cleanser. Get your starter set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/Adam. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Adam. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Seth Green, with Gina Grad on news and Paul Bryan on sound effects. And now, King of the Monsters is also what Lynette and the kids call him behind his back. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. The show's got to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Thank you guys for tuning in, and thanks for sharing with a friend. We love when you do that. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Paul Bryan. You know I don't know anything. You should know I don't know anything.
That's your defense.
It's my defense. It's all encompassing. All right. I want to thank dollarshaveclub.com/Adam, edmen.com, enter podcast one, Castrol Edge as well. So much to do today. First clip, I just thought a lot of people hate Mark Garagus. And
most people.
He gets it. And
does he care?
No, he doesn't.
He stuffs his ears with $100 bills. He doesn't haters.
He doesn't care. Yeah, everyone should tear a page from his playbook, which is he's generally in a good mood. He's always in a good mood. Yeah. He's always gregarious, and he always has energy. Mm-hmm. People forget about energy. It's good to bring a little energy to the party.
And no matter how little you can do for him or what a peon you are, he'll stop everything and do something for you, like when he comes on when Brian and I are hosting.
Yeah, he'll stop. He'll give advice. He'll tell everyone, call him, you know, whatever. He's the busiest man in the world. But, I mean, one of the adages that I've, you know, always felt just rang truer than almost anyone, which is paraphrasing, but you want to get something done, give it to a busy man. Mm-hmm. I found that the busiest guys I know are like your Garguses and your Kimmels, and you give them stuff, and right, they answer emails faster than anybody, and they have the most emails. Yep. So that's but I told you guys I was talking to him on Reasonable Doubt about busting his chops about Kim Kardashian being the new voice of prison reform. And I thought, since I think a lot of people, I don't think they think he's stuffy, but they think he goes on these news program and he holds court and he shouts people down and stuff like that. I thought I'd share a little clip of me busting his chops. And again, for a guy who does what he does and takes what he does pretty seriously, he does take the chop busting pretty nicely. I'll play you the minute 35 of Reasonable Doubt. But maybe big picture, we'll be able to take a good look at this FISA thing and get it out into the public consciousness a little bit, and maybe have it become a little bit of a cause celeb. Look, that's the way it works. It sadly, you want to have some reform or justice brought to the prison system. We need the Kardashians to start tweeting about it. And then, right? No one gives a shit. Right. It's been going on for 40 years. And then Kim Kardashian sends out a couple of tweets, and now it's at the top of everyone's to-do list. So, sadly, that's the way we're wired. There's two Armenians. One is Kardashian, and the other is Gergis. One, Gergis has been screaming about this from the mountaintop for 40 years. No one gives a shit. One, with a nice set of tits, sends a couple of tweets out about it, and now it's job number one for America. So, sadly...
Exactly. You know, I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's a very astute observation of the human condition.
Before you go to bed tonight and every night after tonight, you should think about that. All your work, all your toil, all your studying, the countless hours in the law library, burning the midnight oil, all for naught, because one Kardashian with a C cup could just send out a tweet and do what you could never do in a thousand lifetimes, Mark.
Exactly right.
Well, there you go.
He gets it.
He gets it.
Much like getting yelled at by a football coach, Ralph or Pop Warner will toughen you up for later in life. Like, he's not only been a lawyer and been, I'm sure, said horrible things about him in the courtroom, but also a TV personality. I mean, you know, yelling at people for the better part of a decade. Like, well, this Scott, is nothing. He's been the crucible of that.
Scott Peterson.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's been vilified.
That alone. All right. I've been also, as you know, I got a new, there's no more drunk dialing, but there's drunk Googling.
No, dangerous stuff.
Just sitting home late at night, drinking a little scotch, watching my Partridge Family reruns, and taking a deep dive. Well, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why Partridge Family. Partridge Family was funny. The Brady Bunch wasn't funny. The Brady Bunch was Sherwood Schwartz, who is sort of the... Hanna-Barbera and, Sid and Marty Krofft of the live-action realm. Sherwood Schwartz did Gilligan's Island, and he did Brady Bunch, and he did just stuff that could never survive in today's... Like, you know when they do that thing where you go, oh, Bob Cousy couldn't have been an all-star in today's...
Gina was just saying that before the mics heated
you
up.
You weren't here yet.
You see the finals. These guys, you got seven-footers draining threes. Bob Cousy, all 5'10 of him, could have never survived in today's NBA.
He's D-League at best.
If Bob Cousy was in a fucking wheelchair, that's what Sherwood Schwartz would be. And he's gone. Much
game.
Respect to the man. But that's what he would be trying to produce programming.
Sure.
He produced junk.
Yeah.
And we were all stuck in an institution, and that was the slop that they showed that showed up on our prison. They slid it into our cell, and we had to eat it.
Right.
So he made junk, and the Partridge Family, which was along at the same time to a young 10-year-old Adam Carolla or 8-year-old Adam Carolla's brain, which was trying to sort of process this, the Brady Bunch was schlocky. And, you know, they just had a bunch of music needle drops. And, and it was just dumb. It was even when I was nine, I was like, this is dumb. The Partridge Family had some dynamics going on and was funny. Bonaducci was funny. Yeah. Keith Partridge was funny. Reuben Kincaid, like the manager, was funny.
Broadway's Shirley Jones.
Broadway's David Cassidy.
Yeah, right.
That is the greatest story I've ever heard.
And I was watching it. And it wasn't so. What happened was is the Brady Bunch was syndicated throughout my entire life. Mm-hmm. The Partridge Family went away. Mm-hmm. It was not syndicated. You didn't see it in the 80s and the 90s.
Nope.
And there wasn't the whole thing about it. And so I was watching it from the eyes of a middle-aged man trying to figure out like what I was thinking. And I had a lot of thoughts. One is... They lived in a fairly modest house, but it was two stories. So for me, they lived in a big house because someone would come down the stairs.
There were stairs.
There's another house on top of your house that people can live in and a hole in the bottom of it so people can get up there and sleep.
Is there a kitchen up there too?
Yeah.
Don't get crazy.
So that was one part. The part that I think bumped me the most, like as a kid, the part my sort of... Lionel Hutz, where he's watching L.A. Law, Susan Day, and he's like, oh, come on, that guy's got a belt. Like, that was my poor person thought. The thing that bumped me the most as I look at it is, and so different from the Corollas. Like, I get the house, and they're in a band, and she drives a school bus, and the moms put together, and they make money, and they like each other, and there's no welfare, food stamps. Like, everything was the...
They collaborate creatively.
Yes, everything was the antithesis of a Corolla, but there are still little things that bumped me when I was eight. And one of the biggest bumps... It's like something would happen like in the middle of the night and be like, Ruben's banging on the door, and everyone would file down into the living room. Everyone had pajamas with a robe over the pajamas and slippers.
Brady's had
and I'm like, who owns slippers? Yeah. Like, who owns bathrobes? Like, maybe pajama bottoms, but no top. Like, everyone had their own robe and their own slippers. Yeah. Like, what kind of fantasy is this? I don't know why. That always seemed, because it was like I slept my underwear and my mom slept in a burlap sack and my dad had a boner and, I don't know. Some people slept naked and some people slept in their underwear, but nobody had the pajamas and the robes and the slip. Like, you put your slippers on.
The blue velour robe with the white piping.
Yes. It seemed like wildly... fantastical.
But it had to have been a standards and practices thing, right? Like, you can't have people coming in, kids coming down in their pajamas in the 70s.
No, they could have long sleeve, button up. It wasn't
like Ebenezer.
It wasn't that. It was just like, this is what people who had their shit together. Why slippers? Everyone had slippers. Yep. Everyone's like slippers, the shiny like leather slippers.
You're on shag. There's no need for slippers.
I was just like, where did you get all that stuff? How did you get into all of it? You essentially got dressed to leave the bedroom and go downstairs. Yeah. And everyone, it was all uniform. The kids, little Tracy and the little drummer boy, they all had it. So that was one. Mm. I also was thinking about David Cassidy, and I thought, be careful what you wish for. Because this guy was massive, and he had a great look. He had a great, his voice is kind of, I don't want to say underrated because it's not rated, but he had a very smooth voice. He had a good pop voice. He played the guitar. He wanted to be Jimi Hendrix. Well, so no one wants to be Keith Partridge when you're 17. You want to rock.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like what I'm saying is, be careful what you ask for, because he first off, he looked the part.
So pretty.
He's so pretty, and it was such a 70s look. Also, his comedic chops were good. Like, he was funny, gave a lot of good reactions, and he was okay being sort of Danny's foil and blah, blah, blah. But he had a good voice. He could play the guitar, and he grew up in Hollywood, I think, in L.A., and he wanted to rock, but then he turned into Keith Partridge, and now he's Keith Partridge, he's got to go on the road, and he's selling out Madison Square Garden in a day and everything else, but he's the bubblegum pop guy.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for.
A 14-year-old gets crushed to death during one of his concerts in Europe, I think. He's kind of...
Recently?
He's,
74.
When he was at the height of his whatever.
That makes more sense.
And the 14-year-old is crushed trying to get in. Yeah, he never really gets over it. He feels responsible. He starts drinking. Mm. Drinking becomes kind of a theme. And I feel like he's constantly Keith Partridge now. He never got to realize who he could have been as a musician. And somebody writes a pop song and they give it to you to execute. It's sort of like blaming a comedian for being in a bad sitcom. Mm. That's not his work or her work. That's the script and somebody, and it's
character.
A payday. Right. So he did what he was asked to do. I had a little, I got a little clip of him singing as I was watching it last night. And I was just thinking, you see, he's so charismatic. He's so good looking. And while everyone else is just faking their instruments and not singing, he's actually doing all the singing. Everyone else, the wrecking crew's behind, a bunch of session guys are behind them and all that. It's always funny when the strings and the horns come in. It's like, where's this coming from? You're alone on stage. I'll play you just a little clip of him singing. This was the Princess There was a young princess who came to town and wanted to date Keith Partridge, and of course it didn't work out, but here's a little Keith singing.
Last night, you know I couldn't sleep, wouldn't sleep, tossing and turning about.
Got a good voice.
Thinking about the way it's been, hey, it's been so hard to figure out. We go on sneaking around smoky places all over town.
Waxamana, you should do this one. Come on, man.
I know.
You also were joining the sand.
Finger popping music.
Nice.
There we go.
Cause we're one step short of our heaven. And we won't stop short till we get there together. Together. Maybe we're better on our own.
Finger popping music, you know?
We're dynamite. One step short of our heaven.
I don't know if your drummer could handle this one.
Like, the complex beat.
Where's the bridge where I can destroy the fucking bathroom on the princess liner? Shirley plays her.
Take it, Shirley.
Solo. Time to shine.
Yes. Break it down, Marion the Librarian.
All right. Anyway. He's so charismatic. Yeah. He's so good looking. He had a great voice. He could play. Evidently, he was a good guitar player as well, but he got sucked into this Keith Partridge bubblegum stuff early. Couldn't extricate himself from it, and then just had a problem with alcohol.
Yeah. He died at 67 from alcohol poisoning.
Oh, shit. He had
liver and kidney failure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Not funny, haha, but it's interesting that if you stick around long enough, everything just sort of ends in tragedy. Mm. Now, I know like everyone dies, so that's a tragedy, but you take a look at a guy like that guy's life and to have it, I think if you stepped back and you just went, did David Cassidy have a good life or did he have a bad life? I think you probably hint toward bad.
Well, I'm just looking at the little beat sheet we got here. He was born in 1950. That stampede that injured 800 people and killed a girl was in 74. Ooh, so that's 24 years. Then from 1974 to 2017, things seemed to get out of control. So more than half his life was spent in that peril.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, when I was 8 and miserable and sitting in North Hollywood and watching the Partridge Family, I would have happily traded places with Keith Partridge anytime.
He's got it made.
Yeah.
He's got it made. Well, you take a little closer look, you'll find out everyone's got problems. And but I just realized when he was at the height of his powers, he looked so good. He was perfect for the era, too. Yeah. He had the perfect hair and everything else.
So you were clearly
looking for a good man if David Cassidy is single. Yeah.
It's from yesterday's show.
Oh, my God. So you were more of a David Cassidy guy than a Davy Jones guy. You're Team Cassidy.
Yeah.
Wasn't Davy Jones like cute and little?
He was cute and little. They're always cute and little.
But he took Marsha Brady to prom.
That he did. And he also, that was like the greatest. Every single one of those stupid Sherwood Schwartz episodes would be, the very beginning would be like, all they did was stunt casting. Mm-hmm. So they'd go Greg's having trouble with his slider in Pony League. Yep. And then 10 minutes later, Don Drysdale would just walk in the back. Yeah, he was at the firm today, so I asked him to come by. Like, Joe Namath. Joe Namath came by the firm today. He's a small-time architect in the Valley Village area. Really? Joe Broadway? Joe Willie Namath is swinging by your crappy little architectural firm on fucking On Houston Street in NoHo?
It's Lancashire Joe when he's out here. It's Broadway Joe in New York. It's Lancashire Joe in the Valley.
Oh, everyone would just walk onto that show. I want to get Davy Jones to take me to the prom. He's in England fucking a prostitute right now. Well, get him on a plane.
He's on Satakoi.
Jesus Christ. It was so easy because, it was like stupid stunt casting. And then you could say, this week, Joe Namath stars on. They just get everyone to walk onto that show.
So good.
And, of course, the stars always looked great because you were trying to get Davy Jones to take this gal to her local prom, and then he was like, anything for the fans.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
As long as they pay scale.
That was the most Partridge Family we've ever seen.
It's a funny show.
I was going to say, fairly unfairly, because, like, you know, Gina and I know the Brady Bunch was
dominated
in perpetuity,
yes.
constantly syndicated.
Right.
Like, I judge, my thing as a kid was like, okay, well, if this sucks, I'm not going to go looking for, like, the Partridge Family.
I can't look over the stuff I can't see. It was always Happy Days and Brady Bunch after school.
Yeah, it's like, if this sucks, I'm not going to go looking for other stuff.
Yeah, the Partridge Family was like a good version of the Brady Bunch. All right. Also, I forgot, but I started looking, and of course, Hanna-Barbera spun off the Partridge Family into an animated series.
I do remember
which
that.
Is them in outer space. But
I do not remember that.
But the year was 2020, and everyone's just living in outer space.
Get on it, Elon.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. 2200. I'm sorry. All right. So we got a little time. Alex, 39, Atlanta.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hi, Guy.
Hey, Guy. Yeah, so, man, I've been urinating in the sink for about the last 10 years based on my hero, my broadcasting heroes.
Yeah.
And about a month and a half ago, my wife caught me. I normally close the door. It was the morning time. I was sleepy. Closed the door. She walked in. And the look of disgust on her face, if she would have walked in on me sleeping with her sister, she could not have looked more disgusted than she did.
Yeah.
I think
there's a little envy there as well. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Can't hoist yourself up on that scent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We went to a Memorial Day party and with coworkers. She brings us all them and their wives, and everybody's got a disgusted look on their face, and now I'm the pee in the sink guy. So I'm convinced if we ever get divorced, this will absolutely be an addendum on the paperwork.
It's coming up. Yeah. It's probably paperwork's already begun.
Drawn up.
Yeah. She's pulled the bakery ticket over it. Yeah.
Were you double dutying, Alex? Were you like shaving and peeing?
No, not that.
Were you shaving and peeing? Were you doing something else, man? Or were you just relieving yourself in the sink?
I was just relieved. I do that from time to time. I'll brush my teeth and do that.
Yeah, you could probably sell it easier if you were, I'm saving water, whatever, because,
I'd do a move where you had a face full of shave. She didn't see that, but, Look, work the eco. Work how many gallons a flush is
Get a cost per flush.
Yeah, versus a rinse in the trap there. Is that her sink as well?
Oh, yeah.
It's her. But it's in my sink. I wasn't peeing. I'm not an animal. I'd pee in her sink.
It's in your sink?
It's a duel of vanity?
Yeah, it's a duel.
All right. Then that's your territory.
Helps, yeah.
International piss waters. That's all right. She'll get over it.
And whatever happened to family business? Telling everyone at the picnic?
Exactly.
It's an internal issue.
She got a couple of pops in her and started running.
Danny Tushies did the same thing with Howie Mandel on a yacht.
Right. Sold you out.
So I got 30 people around him to tell me about it. Yeah. All right, Alex. I'll tell you what. You'll recover.
Okay.
All right. That's all I can say. So you put together. You're on probation right now. You put together a couple of months of non-peeing in the sink, and seeing the movie she wants to see, and getting the takeout. You'll be fine.
I guess you're gonna have to go in the bathroom or in the toilet.
Right. We have this is a stand-up clip for us. From Brea. I'm coming out to Denver. I'm bringing Sonny with me. Sonny's pumped.
What do you mean you're bringing him?
His opener.
Yeah, is he being featured?
No, I told him, look, we're going to go to Denver. I'm going to the Shelby Museum. I'm going to Red Rocks. I'm going to Coors. And he's like, I want to go. And I was like, I bet you could go. I'm staying in a condo. Just come on out and stay there. So
nice.
This is on topic of the wife. Or being in Dutch with the wife.
Mm. Not happy about this?
I don't know. Here it is, sorry. But you know these couples, and you see them, like you go down to PCH, and they're on
that big old Honda Goldwing, that motorcycle with the full fairing and the side saddles and the trailer and their feet are up. And by the way, if you're riding a fucking motorcycle and your feet are up higher than the handlebars, you're in a fucking Barca lounger. Like, get a goddamn Winnebago. The thing gets better mileage, okay? These fucking couples and the chick's on the back and she's happy and he's happy and they got the full-faced helmet and they have the intercom. They're wearing a bucket on their head that only hears the sound of their spouse's voice and they're like, we're going to Oregon. With a bucket on your head where all you hear is your fucking wife for 13 hours? Yeah, that's the way I like it. I'm like, me and my wife can't stand on a patio without getting into a fucking fist fight. How? We could stand on a patio with like four other couples and get into a fucking Donnybrook. How does this bucket with the intercom work on it? And I just look at these couples and I go, who are these couples? Like, if I swear to God, if me and my wife had to get on that Honda Goldwing and put the bucket with the intercom helmet on it. I live in La Cañada, okay? La Cañada, you take the 210 freeway for about a mile and a half, and then you hit the 2, and you head into Glendale, where I do the podcast and where I work. I promise you this. If my wife and I got on that Honda Goldwing, put the intercom bucket helmets on, and I got on the 210 before I got to the 2... well before we merged onto the 2, I would just turn into oncoming traffic. I would find the biggest fucking gasoline truck going the fucking fastest. The guy, and I just fuck with ball of smoke, just pink mist everywhere.
Well, that's last words as I headed toward the grill. The tanker truck would be, thank you.
Yeah.
You've made the right choice.
Gratitude.
Yeah.
Finally, we agree.
All right. Let's see. Seth Green is coming in.
Yeah.
We got people been tweeting me all kinds of typhus and typhoid and rat breakout. And well, I mean, they take pictures of L.A. now. It's beyond. By the way, as Drew is fond of saying, it's not... It's not third world, it's medieval.
Yeah.
Third world has this stuff right under control. You know, hey, you're third world. Like my feeling to all you third world countries, hey, you made the top five. Come on.
Yeah. You podiumed?
You're on the podium.
Of worlds?
You're up there with Germany and
everybody's up there.
You look up at it.
You got a medal.
Yeah. No one's called you the 14th world. Yeah, now six police officers showing signs of typhoid fever. God. And just all the stuff Drew was predicting. But again, we've slipped below third world in L.A. and we're into medieval.
Yes. Rich man, poor man, especially in L.A., you have a disease that was once eradicated. You're either the bum on the streets of a tent city or you're the rich kid in Santa Monica who didn't get vaxxed.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So
hold on.
Good.
Go on.
So we have that story. So people keep tweeting me just pictures of just piles and piles of garbage and rats and bums and everything and everywhere.
And didn't Dr. Drew say, oh, we're past putting a lid on this. We gotta think of something else now. We got to burn the city down.
Yeah. So
right. He didn't say that, though. That's my interpretation.
I thought, huh. I remember I've shared it with you guys, but it's been years when Los Angeles Magazine went to all the native Los Angelinos that were celebrities and they said, tell us what you love about the city. Everyone did a love letter to Los Angeles. Right. Not this hombre. This is 10 years ago. I said, this city's a piece of shit. And
I like the credit he was Adam Carolla Grouch.
I was just about
to
say that.
Oh, you have it?
That's your profession.
It wasn't. Look, I was just.
True.
I'm just calling it like I see it.
Right.
I said, this city is great. I was down in Malibu yesterday. Yeah. It's awesome, but that has nothing to do with the people running the city. They didn't put the ocean in the rugged shoreline
Far
there.
From
they
it.
Just tax
yeah.
it.
They sat
the people
on it.
That are doing a job are doing a horrible job. The as far as the geographics of it, that's great. We're blessed. I guess you could say the same about Maui or Aspen or whatever. We're blessed. to have this, but that's got nothing to do with the way they're running this.
Right.
So as I was looking at all these emails or all these tweets about all the typhoid and typhus and outbreaks and everything, this came to mind. So I gave it to Gina. I'm going to let you read it. Professional grouch, Adam Carolla. Well, this is funny that they said, "Are you're native?" I'm like, "Yep." Tell us your thoughts. And I was like, "Okay, buckle up. This is almost a decade ago. First, I'll tell you about MedMen. So if you're in or around Los Angeles and you're going to be here for the big weekend, it's Pride weekend in West Hollywood. Gina's going to be out there shaking her moneymaker.
She'll be out there anyway.
I have done the Gay Pride Parade with Jimmy Kimmel before.
Hello, gays.
We had a float. That's what our sign was supposed to say. So favorite cannabis dispensaries right in the heart of WeHo, by the way, MedMen. So if you're planning on going down there to celebrate Pride, then swing on by any of MedMen's 11 California locations and grab something special. Each of the California stores will be supporting Pride all month with special products from your favorite cannabis brands. And they continue to support. Now, you ready for this? The LGBTQIA. I don't know.
Intersect.
Something. Oh. And I'm not sure what the A is. But either way, if you're going to be in L.A., head down and check out MedMen, right, Dawson?
Special Pride products are only available while supplies last, so visit a MedMen store soon. Don't forget to use code Adam Carolla at checkout to get 10% off your purchase, not to be combined with any other discount offers. Keep out of reach of children for use only by adults 21 years of age and older.
Intersex and asexual, I guess.
Okay.
All right. Seth's here, so we'll read you this, and then we'll bring in Seth Green.
This is what Adam Carolla, Grouch, had to say about California. Everyone does this thing where they go, you can get to the ocean in 25 minutes. You can get to the mountains in an hour. Isn't that wonderful? I guess the answer is yes. But the school system is unusable. The traffic is horrible. Business is fleeing. I don't give credit to Villaraigosa or the city council for the mountains or the oceans. That has to do with plate tectonics. I give them credit for a graffiti problem that's so bad, the street signs have to be covered with barbed wire. I give credit to God for doing a fair to Midland job creating the place and to Villaraigosa and the city council for fucking it up. Potholes and a-holes. That's Los Angeles.
Well, don't you have egg on your face now?
They show you.
Yeah, I owe them all an apology. Jesus, goddamn Christ. I mean, that was right at 10 years ago, yeah. And it was going off a cliff.
I was going to say, how quaint it was all that time ago that our biggest problem was the graffiti.
Yeah, it's a little graffiti.
Yeah. Well, school still sucked, but yes, graffiti.
The Olympics are going to be here.
I hope the world get the world typhus.
LA is like the bad student that wakes till the night before to do the project. Is there going to be like a massive like 2024, right? Is that
when
I think it's whatever it is. That's the year before,
soon.
Are they gonna do like some massive like last minute like cleanup project that's gonna be very ham handed and sort of rushed? That's gotta be
they're gonna scoot all the homeless out of the city then
and
it's
like a
be...
massive like you know graffiti washing.
I think it's gonna be different. I think it's gonna be more drastic. 2028?
Oh, is that it?
Hmm. Yeah, I think what they're going to do. When I used to work...
Don't wait until 2027 and a half.
When I worked construction, one time I worked on this really dumpy apartment on the west side. It was on Mariposa, I think it was, in West Hollywood or something. But it was a bad part of town and a bad apartment. And Lacquer Lips was the name of the guy who was the painter. And he just sprayed lacquer. He just come in and just start spraying lacquer. And
lacquer lips.
Well, that's what we call them. He's coming and spray lacquer and give everyone a headache. But I went into one of the apartment units he went into, and behind the refrigerator, like he pulled the refrigerator off the wall, and he started spraying. And there were a bunch of little cockroaches that were like stuck to the wall, and he just painted right over the cockroaches. So I think we're just gonna pave right over the homeless.
We're gonna like, scrub the homeless people.
We're just gonna like paint them and just tarp them. Like I don't think we can move them. I just think we're gonna do like you know in a sitcom when the person walks through the door and in the back you see the scrid of or screed. I don't know, it's a scrim of like the neighborhood, like the trees
and stuff like that.
It's on stage. Yeah, we're just gonna do that. Yeah. We're just gonna cover them over with looks like sidewalk.
You can hold a tree,
palm trees and stuff. Yeah. Or just take big tarps, that's print good. Everything out, and just go right over the top of them.
Good.
Oh, I mean, like we did in World War II. you know, McDonnell Douglas and Boeing and all these places out here, Skunk Works, and they were all building warplanes, and they had nets over everything. So from aerial surveillance, Burbank, right over here, looked so from the it looked like a bunch of scrub from the from an airplane, wow. But it was really parking lots and manufacturing and everything wow. else. Don't you guys know that?
No.
You can find a picture, Max Zapata, of Burbank, where the Burbank Airport is. Mm-hmm. That's where Kelly Douglas, Kelly Johnson, who had the Skunk Works, Lockheed Skunk Works, and they built a lot of Howard Hughes-y type stuff there. And they were scared that the Japanese or somebody was going to bomb them, like firebomb mm-hmm. them or something. And they just had huge, big nets that just sat up like 8 foot off the ground. And you'd park and walk and work like under them. But if you had a surveillance, whatever, over top, it just looked like a bunch of San Fernando Valley fields.
Wow.
Didn't want them knowing.
The camouflage, literally.
Where it was. So maybe we'll do that with the homeless.
Have them walk around like shrubs.
Yeah.
They're lined down most of the time.
We'll get them shrub outfits. Well, not all shrubs. Some will be dressed like fire hydrants.
Yeah. Mailbox.
We'll get a two-man team of a bus bench.
God willing, we're still doing this podcast in 2027. There will be a last-minute push to address this problem because it's been dormant for, you know, 8 years.
Oh, yeah. All right. Seth Green is out there. Let me just hit Castrol Edge, and we'll bring Seth in. Heat, friction, viscosity, breakdown, rob your engine. Maximum performance. Castrol Edge helps fight friction, deliver maximum levels of engine performance. Three times. Oh.
I kind of heard something.
Three times, fool.
Three times, fool. Stronger against viscosity breakdown than leading oils. Castrol Edge. Unlock the true performance in your car today with Castrol Edge. All right. Max Back, can you find any pictures?
Whoa.
We're seeing like huge crowds of employees at Lockheed and these big, wow. huge canopied nets over the top of them. And you can see when you look up, there's piles of grass and bushes and stuff.
Oh, my God. It's like a second city.
Yeah, this is in Burbank Airport where Lockheed was. And then Kelly Johnson was the mastermind behind Skunk Works. And Skunk Works put out all the military stuff as well as like the Blackbird, the SR-71, and all those crazy planes. And that's where they built it all there. And they were scared of getting bombed. I don't know.
Or at the very least, surveilled.
Surveilled and then something. So, all right. There you go. A little piece of Valley history.
Everything's under intent.
All right. Will be hard.
Our friend Seth Green is out there. Change the Land is the name of his movie. And we'll talk to him right after this.
And now, Sonny Corolla reads a tweet from James Woods.
If you try to kill the king, you better not miss. Hashtag hang them all.
Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Yeah, that's going to come up in the divorce.
The one that got bounced.
Seth Green in studio. Changeland, the name of the movie, yes.
That tweet is out of context, though. He was talking about Christmas decorations.
Oh, I did not know that.
Well, thank you.
I saw the trailer. Very interesting looking movie, which is coming out in theaters and on VOD this Friday. That's June 7th. Seth wrote it, directed it, and stars. And it's got Breckin Meyer in it, Macaulay Culkin as well, Rachel Bloom. Shot in Thailand. It seemed very interesting and cathartic and like a very interesting departure for you. So tell us about it.
Well, it wasn't intended to be a departure per se. I took a trip to Thailand with my actual real friend, Dan. And while we were there, everything that happened to us felt like a movie. Mm-hmm. From us being misinterpreted as a honeymooning couple to each of the experiences that we had, just the taking kayaks around, you know, atolls in the middle of the Indian Ocean. It was all like an adventure that felt like a movie. So I started writing it down and taking pictures. And then I wrote a story that would support that.
Macaulay Culkin, I feel like he pops up in cool indie films, but I don't see that much of him. Is he out there? Is he wanna be out there?
I think he well, at least what I've gleaned is he doesn't really care. He's not trying.
So that's your $10 million worth net worth at age 10.
Yeah, I mean he's saved all his money and he never got into any serious trouble with drugs or alcohol, and he just creatively pursues whatever endeavor he chooses. We got to make a movie together in 2002. And I've always loved him as an actor, and we've stayed close friends since then. And then when I started writing this character, he was the only person that I had in mind for it, so I was happy he agreed to do it.
I'll tell you, the best thing you can do, the most flattering thing, I was driving here from FX this morning, and I was talking to everyone, and I was like, give me the rundown on Seth. And when you start verbalizing what Seth's up to and what he's been up to and all the accomplishments and Family Guy and Robot Chicken and Austin Powers and Italian Job and everything, it just keeps going and going and going. You realize it's a lot of work. I mean, you put together a huge body of work for somebody that people sort of regard as a young man. It's a lot of material. I mean, you started early.
I did. I started working professionally when I was 7, and then I've just made a point of working hard my entire life. That's, you know, I really enjoy it. I love getting to perform and create stuff in whatever shape. And so I never really get tired of that.
You're on Johnny Carson at what age?
I think I had just turned 13.
Was that right after Radio Days?
It was for Radio Days, yeah.
Oh, God, this is still one of the best movies ever.
Oh, right on.
It's great. God, oh, that's a great
family. That's a great, it's a family Woody favorite Allen
movie. Oh, we're watching pictures of you.
That little boy.
But yeah, also
I learned a lot of life lessons in public.
The voiceover stuff is, you know, most of the time when you're that, I don't know, child star or whatever we want to call it, the voiceover part is usually the dominion of the fat old dude, not the young spry kid.
Well, I think the difference for me, I loved doing mimicry work and doing voices. I was really into cartoons at a young age. And because I read at a higher level than my voice sounded in maturity, I was constantly getting radio jobs or commercials for different products because I could read well but still sounded like a kid. And then I got to do some cartoons when I was young, and then that just evolved to getting to do cartoons when I was an adult.
Walked in to my son's room. He's going to turn 13 in a week, and he's watching The Family Guy. You know, it's crazy. I said to my son's all getting all caught up on The Family Guy. Sure. I said to my son and my daughter, what show, they're both in the seventh grade. I said, what show are all the kids, all your junior high, what are they all into? And they said, The Office. And I said, that doesn't have Seth in it. I backhanded both of them. But they're watching The Office. He said, all the kids love The Office, and they love Family Guy, and they love The Simpsons. Like, it's such a higher level. I was watching Flintstone reruns, and I Love Lucy reruns.
I remember when I was 12 and 13 being obsessed with Monty Python, and when I discovered things like The Kids in the Hall. It all was at a maturity level above me, but that's what made it aspirational.
I loved All in the Family and all those great sitcoms from back then, but I would watch whatever was put in front of me. Like, I couldn't
discern.
Yeah, you couldn't seek out. I mean, now it's a meritocracy. Like, these kids are all seeking out The Office and The Family Guy and shows like that. And it's the ultimate, which is, you know, what we had was an arranged marriage to our neighbor. Like, she's not the most beautiful woman in the land. She lives across the street, and our uncle set us up. This was them seeking it out.
Yeah.
But if anything, you fought for those rights and privileges that your kids now have. Like, when I was young, I had to get into fistfights because I loved things like Spider-Man and cartoons. Mm-hmm. And now all of that media, all of that intellectual property has dominated the planet. And so I know that if I have kids, they're not going to take an ass whooping in the street for thinking Black Widow is an awesome hero. And so I feel like that we suffered so that our kids have an easier life.
Adam is one of them. Get him.
No, I'll tell you what we did have that our kids don't have is you take a look or listen to the theme song from the Spider-Man cartoon from like the 60s, and we had kick-ass,
it's a jazzy number,
big arrangements with full horns, brass sections, and strings and stuff. And now they have like a you know, they have a DJ Khaled yelling another one.
But I was just having this conversation with somebody. I actually think that's just the sophistication of the audience increasing. So when television was in its earlier stages, or when there were only three networks, the audience needed their hand to be held as they're introduced to a new kind of show. And over time, the audience gets so used to certain storytelling conventions that they don't need as much information. Like, I found that with editing this movie, there were things that I thought when writing it, oh, I need to explain this or be heavy-handed so that the audience gets what I'm going for. But then when I started showing it to people, I realized the more I trimmed away, the more they were able to discover themselves in it.
That's a great point, because theme songs were only exposition. Here's how we got here.
Right. Yeah.
You don't do that.
I mean, not Gilligan's Island. That was a myth, a mystery wrapped in a riddle. But
wrapped in an enigma.
Yeah. I know. It's like, you don't have to watch the Beverly Hillbillies. It's all laid out right at the beginning.
The first line is, let me tell you a story.
Here's the backstory.
Yeah. So, movie, how long did it take, and how hard was it to shoot in Thailand, and or was it easier, or was it the monsoon season blow in, or like, how'd it work?
We were really lucky with the weather, and we only got rained out one day, and we had prepared so much that it didn't completely sink us. But it was incredible to get to shoot there. The producers that I worked with, this company Living Films, they've been making movies in Thailand for over 25 years, so they're well plugged into the infrastructure. We got support from the government and the Board of Tourism and the national parks. And as a result, we were able to film in places that people have never filmed before, but that actual people can go to visit, which is kind of the thing I love the most about the movie, is if you like this trip that we take, if you enjoy this adventure, you can actually follow in the footsteps of the characters. All of the places we visit are real places. All of the things that we get to do are things that you could go do.
I hear Thai people are exquisitely nice.
Yeah, it was.
That's all I've heard.
It's beautiful, man. They're so gracious, and it really is otherworldly. And everywhere we went, people are just very open. There's a saying that instead of saying "I changed my mind," their literal translation is "I changed my heart." And so that gives you a sense of where those people are coming from.
Yeah. It must be nice, because I feel like Oliver Stone shoots all his movies there, but that's because he's in search of something a little extracurricular in the evening.
Yeah, we didn't get into any of that. This is a very pedestrian tourist experience.
Were you recognized there? Was Macaulay recognized? Was Brecken?
Yeah, by tourists, oddly enough. Thai people are incredibly respectful and considerate, and even if they recognize you, they don't make a fuss. But there are tourists in Thailand from all over the world, and they definitely got excited. In fact, there's a scene that we filmed, and I had taken a cue. I'd heard Scorsese talking about how they shot King of Comedy, and that scene where Jerry Lewis is walking down the street and people are all yelling, "Hey, Jerry, hey, Jerry." And apparently Jerry Lewis was like, "Marty, just set up the camera across the street. I'm going to walk down the street and also make sure the character's name is Jerry."
Right.
And when I had Mac, he's in the movie, he plays kind of a local celebrity. And I was like, we're just going to renegade gorilla this through these public streets. And anybody that recognizes you, you just wave to them as if you are this local celebrity. And you can see it in the film.
I was also told that there's a spot, a Rally's commercial. I don't know if it's out of New Orleans, but you got the keys to the city.
Yeah.
And there's like a local news that became such a sensation. You want to set the table and we can actually take a look at it?
Yeah. So I've done hundreds of commercials in my career. And another one that I did was for this burger chain called Rally's and then called Checkers, I think, in the Midwest. And we coined the phrase cha-ching, making a case for drive-thrus being incredibly expensive. And so cha-ching as a catchphrase just sort of took off, and a lot of sports teams made it their rallying cry when they would get a point or a touchdown or what have you. And especially the New Orleans Saints, they adopted it so significantly that they started showing the commercial on the Jumbotron every time somebody would score. So I get invited to the wild card playoffs when the Saints are playing the Raiders at the Superdome, and I got invited to lead a halftime cheer with all of the cheerleaders, and it's madness. And as a part of that, I got to do a tour of the city. I was 18, and I was escorted around by a bunch of armed police officers, and we went to everywhere from, you know, local restaurants to hospitals, and just I was the cha-ching guy. And what was crazy is I was working on an ABC series starring with Terry Garr at the time, but there was such a disconnect between the cha-ching guy and Seth Green, the actor, that I really looked at it as an opportunity to play a part, you know, and not take any of it personally, even though I was kind of like the Beatles for a day.
Yeah. I think we have the local 8 New Orleans news.
This is ridiculous.
Our team report now takes a look at the treat for fans at the halftime show. It featured the teenager who gave fans their rallying cry.
News 8's Ken Wells was there to record every cha-chinging moment.
That's Seth Green, just your average 17-year-old struggling actor, better known in New Orleans as
cha-ching, two kids meals,
the kid from Morales' cha-ching commercial. Ever since that ad started running in New Orleans this fall, cha-ching has been the rallying cry of the Saints. This week, the fast food chain flew Seth into New Orleans, where he received the key to the city.
Ching! Smaller than you'd expect.
National key.
With Chris Owens, a few new moves. And then he toured the French Quarter.
Give me a good cha-ching.
Cha-ching!
Cha-ching! Cha-ching! Cha-ching!
Cha-ching!
Cha-ching!
There were some critics out today.
Uh-oh.
You said cha-ching, I said cha-chump.
But Seth was starting to understand that something
Raiders.
Unusual was going on here. Then came the pregame pep rally, and several hundred fans wanted to hear, you guessed it,
chicken sandwich and a large soda, bada bing.
So they fly this 17-year-old kid in VIP.
Ching.
And then they give him the keys to the city. Bada bing. And then the best was yet to come.
Cha-ching!
Imagine Seth Green loose on the floor of the dome in front of more than 70,000 screaming,
I'm in the
yelling,
costume from the commercial.
Yeah, you really are.
Give the people what they want.
Well, so what's it like?
There
to
was
be
no
Seth
plan.
Green tonight?
The spirit is amazing. Yeah. Cha-ching! Man, I'm very happy. I'm very welcoming.
Ken Wells, WVUE. News 8.
So it's been all downhill pretty
zero
much.
Zero coordination.
What even up to since?
I walk out there with all the cheerleaders, and they're like, all right, go do it. And I'm like, do what?
Do it?
You guys are the cheerleaders, shouldn't I?
We're just discussing this last week. I've had the same thing where they go, like, we want you out to toss the coin at halftime. Everybody go to the 50-yard line and do the coin flip or do the whatever. There's a lot of thought to, like, I'm saying, like, I rode in the Indy 500 double seater with Mario Andretti, and you're starting to get in the car, and they go, you got a helmet? And you're like, no, I don't travel with a helmet. They're like, oh, what size is your head? Like, I don't know.
It's
oh, okay.
Figured out.
Hey, Herb, you don't have a helmet. Like, it's weird. They push
you. How did
we
not think about this beforehand?
They push you out there, but they never really go what you're going to do once you're out there.
Right.
They go, we got to get you onto that field.
And
give me a mic.
Thousands of people. Like, that's where they sought refuge during Katrina. So it's like it really houses a lot of folks. And I'm not a big guy, and I was also a teenager.
It's
they're just like, go say cha-ching or something. It was like a different language was spoken there, and that language was cha-ching.
Seth, tell me if this rings true, because I've realized show business doesn't really have a middle. It's either we need you on stage 11 hours early so we can walk through the blocking, and you're like, we don't need to do all that. It's just an award show. Just come out and whatever. Or it's a just push you out there and do your thing, although you don't know what your thing is. They don't really have a middle ground of get here 20 minutes early. Let's discuss some beats.
Yeah. There's not a lot of that opportunity. There's one extreme or the other.
Cha-ching, man.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's also, we've always talked about, like, I was talking to Dr. Drew about this. Like, the best part of my childhood was, like, commercials where it's like, I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Or, right.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, literally like the little stupid little jingles or saying.
The beef?
Like, where's the beef? They would catch on
ancient
and take
Chinese
over.
Secret, huh?
Calgon?
Take me away.
Oh, there was that, and there was the spot maker.
What's the spot maker?
The spot maker was this little Grinch that lived inside of a washing machine. Back when you used to be able to shame women.
The good old days, the salad
yeah, like,
days.
I'd have one of the clients over, and like, there's spots on the glasses when we're eating. And the woman's like,
Sharon, Harvey's collars are filled with ring around the collar.
Oh, if you wanted a second cup of coffee at the other other couple's house, or there was a ring around my collar, yeah, or there were spots on the stemware.
That was a referendum.
Shame spiral. And then every once in a while, the mother-in-law would come to stay. White glove comes out, just wiping it along the top of the door jamb and wiping it along every bookcase.
If that was my mother-in-law, I would get divorced.
There were so many commercials that were just squarely aimed at shaming women. And I'm glad we're not living in those days, but we may have swung a little too far the other direction. Yeah. Let's bring it toward the middle. Now the guy's the buffoon and the chick doesn't give a shit.
That's right.
Well, and now we focus more squarely on moms than women in general.
Mm, that's
the veggie
true.
Wash and the diaper.
I always knew you were an advocate for equal pay.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Equal representation.
First, I got to tell you this. Brian is annoying. But one of the most annoying features about Brian, he doesn't even control. His wife makes more money than he does, and that's good.
Significantly.
And I this notion of like, well, you know, guys and their fragile egos. Right. If my wife made one-tenth the money I make, I'd be over the fucking moon about it.
Like, I'm quite proud of her.
I love it.
I'm quite proud of her.
Why not? You eat sushi every other night. Of course you like it.
We had sushi on Friday with Dessa.
That's what I'm saying. You have the spot. Oh, Calganite. That was the Sputmaker.
We seriously brought Tessa to Katsuya and Brentwood. At
that's what I'm saying.
On a Friday.
Impossible.
If you're a sushi bar.
Your wife's just at home, you know, running a mop.
Indeed.
Okay.
Wouldn't happen.
So I'm all for it. All right. Let's see.
Wait, what did we advocate?
I don't know what we advocate. No, I want women to make, I want the woman I live with to make more money than me is what I'm saying.
I think the debate is over equal pay for the same jobs.
Oh, all right. Well, listen, if I'm living with her, then she should get equal pay.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Because it affects me directly.
We're on the same page, bro.
So I guess the question is, how many women are you willing to live with?
Oh, that's a great question.
Well, we'll rotate.
To turn the tide of this nation.
Yeah. That's a shame. All right, let me hit JB Well, and then we'll take a break. We'll do news. Can you find Calganite, the spot maker?
We have a...
Oh, this woman is humiliated because there's spots on her glasses.
Oh, we're trying to find one where the woman's humiliated.
The spot maker lives in your...
Keep looking.
In your dishwasher, and he makes spots, and he embarrasses you. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm the spot maker. I live in your dishwasher, spotting and streaking glasses and dishes. Do I make you unhappy? Embarrass you? Oh no! Calganite!
That's right, spot maker. Calganite with blue cleaning crystals to wash soft water clean, rinse soft water clear. It keeps the spot maker out of your dishwasher.
Pure Bolivian Calganite.
For the cleanest, clearest dishware possible, get
like
Calganite.
Yeah,
Calganite, the end of the spot maker.
Yeah. Wow. Do I embarrass you?
Yeah. It's so straightforward. Yeah,
something to be done.
And obviously directed toward the ladies. That was not for the dudes in 1969 or whatever it was. Just the notion that one could be embarrassed by spots on their glasses. All right. Let me hit JB Weld for big or small repair projects. You need something that lasts. We're proud to have JB Weld Epoxy Adhesive as one of our sponsors. We use it here. I use it here. I use it in the garage, and we use it in the studio as well. It's available at jbweld.com, and you can get it at Home Depot and Amazon, Walmart, O'Reilly, and all that. JB Weld, world's strongest bond. All right, quick break. We'll come back with Seth Green. We'll do the news right after this.